The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
You will hear two people discussing an extramural course. Fill in the information you hear on the application form below.
First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 6.
Now, here is the conversation.
Hi, Jenny. What are you doing down here?
Oh, hello, Steve. Well, I'm trying to fill in this form, but I'm having a bit of a struggle as I sprained my wrist playing tennis yesterday.
Don't worry, I'll do it for you. Let's have your pen. Right, fire away.
Let's see. I want to do the drama and theatre studies. I'd like to get the certificate. The course number is 60201. No, sorry, 202. It seems to be on Thursday at 7:30.
Yes, well, we don't have to put all that down. Now, I suppose we can call you Miss.
Don't be funny. And spell my name right.
Well, if you'll have a name like Jenny McPherson... Let's see, it's M-A-C.
No, big M, small c, no A.
Right, M-C-P-H-E-R-S-O-N.
Yes, okay, and don't forget it's a capital P, McPherson.
Now, what's your address?
Well, I've just moved, so it's 6 Westway Avenue, Longford.
Hang on, don't go so fast. 6 Westway Avenue where?
Longford. What's next?
Your phone number, daytime and evening.
Well, I've only got one, as we can't have calls at school in the daytime, so put down the evening one. 605-4829.
4829, okay. And you're a teacher. How old are you? 29?
Wish I were. No. 32.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 7 to 10.
Do they want my date of birth?
No, don't seem to, just age. How about educational qualifications?
Well, I've got a degree in English literature and a diploma in media studies.
Media studies, right. Now, have you ever done any of these extramural courses before?
No, don't think so. Although I did do something on psychodrama once. But no, it wasn't extramural, was it?
That seems to be it, except for the fee.
Yes, well, that's the same for all the central courses. I think £25. I suppose I have to include it with this form.
Looks like it. Do you want me to write the cheque out for you? But you'll have to sign it.
That is the end of part 1.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part 2.
Part 2.
You will hear the overseas student officer talking to some new students
About the arrangements for an excursion to Ironbridge.
First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 15.
Hello, everyone. My name is Pamela Sutcliffe, and most of you already know that I'm the Overseas Student Officer here at Salopian Technical College. Next Tuesday, the 28th of September, we have arranged an excursion for all new students to the important historical town of Ironbridge. We are hoping you'll all come, because not only is the history of Ironbridge very important and interesting, but also an excursion like this is a relaxed and fun way to get to know each other. Ironbridge is about 55 kilometres from here, and we'll be travelling by the college bus, which holds 40 people. If there are more than that, we'll bring a couple of staff cars as well, though I might ask you to indicate on the list if you have a car and would be willing to take a couple of passengers. The list I'm referring to is up there on the student notice board. And if you would like to come on Tuesday, would you please add your name as soon as possible? By the way, could you please print your name clearly? I know some people have wonderful signatures, but often I'm afraid I can't read them, which can cause problems. So if we need extra transport and you could bring your car, can you tick the car column next to your name? Could you also add your student number and your telephone number, just in case there are any last-minute changes and we have to contact you? The other information I need to give you is about lunch. There's a very nice little restaurant in Ironbridge, which gives a 15% discount to the college when we bring groups. That means lunch is only about £4, and they do good vegetarian meals too, so it's usually no problem for those of you on special diets. But if you prefer to eat your own food, that's fine too, either on the bus or in the park. But I'd encourage you to try the restaurant. Now, talking of costs, I should tell you that the bus will only cost you £10, and if you bring your car, we'll pay for the petrol, so you get a free trip in return for driving there. Will you please sign up by Saturday at 6 p.m. at the latest? The list is closed after that. We will depart at 9:30 a.m. sharp on Tuesday morning, so please make sure that you arrive at least 15 minutes before so that you can find a seat and get settled on the bus.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 16 to 20.
The college bus garage is behind the engineering workshop. It's quite easy to find. If you come here to the Student Union building, then walk east down the avenue until you get to the childcare centre on your left, and then turn left and walk past the sports centre and the tennis courts, which are both on your left. Cross over Central Square and opposite you is the engineering workshop. Walk around the back and you'll see the bus. Please wear comfortable shoes as we'll be walking around Ironbridge and be on our feet for most of the day. Wear a warm jacket, and you might like to bring an umbrella and a backpack to put them in if the weather's warm and sunny, which we hope it will be, but of course we can't guarantee that. Certainly bring your cameras and any snacks or drinks for the bus journey there and back, which should take about an hour and a half each way. You should all check the notice board on Monday, and we'll also put a note in your mailbox to confirm arrangements, so don't forget to check it. Now, why are we visiting Ironbridge? Well, Ironbridge, as the name suggests, has got the original Iron Bridge. That is, the first ever Iron Bridge in the world. It was the birthplace of the Industrial Revolution, and for 40 years it led the world, as Britain changed from an agricultural society into an industrial one. It's hard to imagine today that this pretty, sleepy little tourist town was one of the most important places in England for over a century. Just imagine, 200 years ago, people from all over Europe and even North America came to Ironbridge to learn about what was then the latest technology. Today it is listed as a World Heritage Site by the United Nations, as they consider the unique collection of industrial monuments, rank it alongside the Grand Canyon, the Pyramids, and the Great Barrier Reef. One place that's fun to visit is Blist Hill, which is a reconstruction of a small Victorian industrial town where people are working and living as they did 100 years ago. I hope you'll enjoy the day. It's been a very popular excursion in previous years, so I'm looking forward to going again next Tuesday. Now don't forget to put your name on the list as soon as possible.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part three.
Part three.
You'll hear a tutor and a student discussing transport. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 25. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 25.
Come in, John, come in. How's the paper going?
Morning, Mr. Taylor. Pretty well, actually.
Good, good. It's not all about bicycles, is it? I know you've got a thing about bicycles.
Yes, but that's just...
There are other ways to get around town, you know.
Yes, I know. And I think I've researched pretty well all of them.
Right then. So your paper's about urban transport in London, eh?
Not just London, but that is going to be the focus. I've also looked at urban transport systems in cities around the world. Madrid, Beijing, Mexico City, Amsterdam, Paris, other countries too.
You have been busy, haven't you? What's the purpose of your study?
Well, two things, really. I want to see if there are more efficient ways of organizing urban transport systems while cutting down on traffic congestion, and of course pollution, and to find ways of encouraging people to use public transport instead of their cars.
Let's start with that then, with cars. I think you'll have a hard time thinking of ways to persuade people to swap their cars for a crowded bus or underground train. They're convenient, comfortable, faster, and sometimes they're a status symbol, too.
Okay, I agree that cars will probably always be the most popular means of transport. But there are ways to cut down the number of people who bring their cars into the city. It's a problem that affects every big city, and several methods have been tried.
I know. As I've found to my cost, when I go into London, which I do 2 or 3 times a week, I have to pay £5 to get into the city centre. Has your research thrown up any more places where they do this?
Oh, yes. Apart from London, there's Oslo, Stockholm, Singapore. Now, there, in Singapore, they've got it really organized. They've imposed a tax on all roads leading into the city center, and they have electronic sensors that identify each car, and then debit a credit card belonging to the owner.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 26 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 26 to 30.
And other cities, instead of charging motorists to come into the city centre, have tried other measures.
Such as?
Well, in Athens, cars are only allowed to go into the city centre on alternate days, depending on their license plate number. In Bogota and some other Latin American cities, such as Quito and Sao Paulo, they've developed what is called a BRT system.
A what?
A BRT system, a bus rapid transit system. People leave their cars outside the city and take buses, which have special express lanes into and through the city. It's been so successful that they're trying it out in Mexico City, Beijing, Seoul, and Taipei. And other cities are pedestrianizing more and more areas of the city center.
I see. How have these measures affected traffic congestion and pollution levels?
In most cases, it has led to a reduction in the number of cars entering the city center. Certainly in Singapore, where it's now much easier to move around the city and the air is much cleaner than most other cities in that part of the world. London, too, I believe. I can give some facts and figures if you like.
Please do.
In the first year after the tax was introduced, the number of people using buses to get to the city center rose by 38%.
Really? 38%? Incredible.
Yes, and the number of cars entering central London dropped by about 18%. There's more. The number of people using bicycles and mopeds went up 17%.
I knew we'd get to bicycles at some point.
Well, yes. In the city, the bicycle has a lot going for it. You can avoid traffic jams, there are no parking problems, they don't pollute, they're cheap to run, and they don't cost very much. Oh, and here's another fact for you. You can fit 20 bicycles in the space needed to park one car.
Well, I never. But I can't see it catching on. Besides, we seem to be getting off the point.
Not at all. China, Japan, and Holland have all integrated bicycles into their urban transport systems. In Holland and Japan, they've got special parking areas for commuters who get to the station by bike. And Japan has even built multi-story parking facilities for bikes close to railway stations. Then look at America. In New York, delivery services use bicycles because they can deliver messages and small parcels far more quickly and at much lower cost than cars or vans. Even the police use bicycles. In fact, in about 80% of the towns in America where the population is around 500,000, the police regularly patrol on bicycles. And they have proved to be effective because they can reach the scene of an accident or crime faster and more quietly than officers in patrol cars, making a lot more arrests per officer.
Well, you do know your bicycles, don't you? But I do need to hear more about the public transport system and what's to be done about that. And I'd like you to look a bit more into the economics of it, how much it will cost to improve the situation, and so on. Okay? Right. See you next Tuesday.
Yes, next Tuesday. Bye, Mr. Taylor.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part 4.
Part 4.
I'd like to go over some simple security measures today.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to go over some simple security measures today. As you all know, there have been a few small incidents with students' possessions being lost or stolen, and as the student representative for Middlesex Hall of Residence, I'd like to remind everyone of a few simple things we can do to make our accommodation safer for everyone and to remind everyone of the security measures already in place. First of all, I'd like to go over what security measures are already in or around the halls of residence. As you turn off the road into Middlesex Hall, there is a security barrier for people arriving by car. Students, or anyone else for that matter, have to report to security through the speaker before they can even enter the car park. Once they're in the car park, we have CCTV, that's closed circuit television, linked directly to the security office, so that anyone coming into the front entrance via the car park can be seen by the person on duty. We also have cameras around the Hall of Residence. The film from the CCTV is kept by security in case there is a problem and we need to send the film to the police to help identify the person. So, barriers and CCTV. In addition to these, there is security lighting in the car park and around the Hall of Residence, which is on from night to morning. These security measures are there to help, but the really important thing is the front entrance. At the front entrance is a keypad lock. Now, as you all know, to open this, you need your student card and the 4-digit security code. As you also know, you should not give this code to anyone you do not know, and you should never let anyone into the Hall of Residence. Remember that for all the security measures we take, if you let someone into the hall, then anything we do to keep students' possessions safe will not help. After the front door, we have the reception desk. Now, this is manned 24 hours a day, but the security guard has a lot to do and may not be there all the time. If you need to call security, go to the nearest phone or call on your mobile. The number is 9666, and they will be with you as soon as they can. The next thing I want to mention are your own personal security measures. By this, I mean the locks on your room door and window, your personal alarm, and the university bus. All student rooms have a swipe lock that we open with our student cards. Do not leave your room door unlocked if you're going out for a long period of time. And do not leave your card in a place where someone can pick it up and enter your room. This is, of course, common sense, but people still leave their rooms unlocked and still leave their cards around. The next thing is your room window. Everyone has a key for their window, and everyone should try to keep their windows locked when they are out of the building. However, the security guard has told me that he often finds windows open, and even worse, he finds windows open on the ground floor. Please don't do this. It's an invitation to a burglar to enter the hall and take people's things. Finally, two more items: personal alarms and the university bus. Now, the students' union gives every student their own personal alarm if you go to collect it. A personal alarm is something that gives out a loud noise if you press it when you think you may be in danger. It lets people know where you are and that you need help. The second thing you can do is use the university bus. It takes students from the campus to the town and to other places on campus. It goes every half an hour and it's free, so please try to use it, especially after dark.
That is the end of part 4.